Uhuru, and welcome to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe. And we're going to be talking today about the situation in Kenya, where following a stolen election between neocolonial forces, violence has erupted. But before we go to that, I want to have somewhat of a general discussion around the question of the electoral process and where it's capable of going or not going. I want to have this discussion because in various places in the world, we have forces participating in the electoral process. The Pan-Africanist Congress of Zania, located in occupied Zania, or what is known by the colonial name, South Africa. The PAC is the primary revolutionary force who led armed struggle during the struggle against the apartheid regime, and even now, with the end of apartheid, the neocolonial ANC administers an even worse situation for African people there. The PAC, which is a member organization of the African Socialist International, an international party of African revolutionaries led by the ideology of African internationalism, participates in the electoral process there as one means of struggle. In West Africa, you know, another organization that joined the African Socialist International called the Africanist Movement is struggling on the ground. The Africanist Movement has bases in much of West Africa, and in Sierra Leone, there's discussion about using the electoral process to forward the struggle for African liberation. In the U.S., the African People's Socialist Party, which had has worked for more than 20 years to build the ASI, the African Socialist International, has itself participated on various occasions in local electoral processes, the most recent being one in St. Petersburg, Florida, I believe about a year or two ago, where Comrade Chimurenga Waller ran for city council there. And oftentimes, many progressive forces don't know how to participate in the electoral process or what can be won out of participating in the electoral process, as well as what its limitations are. And we've talked about it in the past on Uhuru Radio. And I think in light of the situation in Kenya, as well as the upcoming presidential election process in the U.S., that is claiming to offer some solution for Africans, it's important for us to have this discussion again to get an understanding of it. And I want folks out there to be able to participate in this discussion. You can email us. You can email in at dj@uhururadio.com, or you can call in and speak with us. You can call 727-565-1599. You can call us at our Skype ID, which is Uhuru Radio, capitalized U, capitalized R, and a space in between, Uhuru Radio. And if you don't have Skype, you can go to Skype.com and download it for free, and you can speak to us through your computer, through Skype, for free from anywhere in the world, you know. So I want people to take advantage of that, and I'll announce that again later on in the program as well. But yeah, so first of all, you know, I think it's important to note the fact that an election is a nonviolent contest between forces with power over control of the state. When you're looking at elections under a world capitalist system, you're looking at a nonviolent contest between different sectors of the white ruling class for control of the state. And the state, when we talk about the state, what you're talking about is the apparatus of coercion that includes forces like the police, includes the army, the navy, the court system, includes the school systems, includes all these types of things. The state is an, again, an, it's a tool of repression of coercion to maintain the relationship between the haves and the have-nots, to maintain the relationship in a society where it's split between those who have and those who don't have as a result of having lost it, having it stolen by those who do have, you know. So when you're talking about an election under a world capitalist system, you're talking about a nonviolent contest between different sectors of the white ruling class for control of that entity, for control of the state. And that's even when it's an election in Africa, you know, in these other places, you know. In those cases, you're looking at a different forces who usually have one particular imperialist power or another behind them, like what we've seen in places like in Congo, with recent elections there, or sometimes you even have a force, you know, that is falling out of favor with the imperialist power that was behind them before, and is being replaced by a new neo-colonial stooge, like what we recently saw in Sierra Leone. But that's what you're looking at. That's what you're looking at when we're looking at the electoral process in Africa and the electoral process in general under a world capitalist system. You're looking at a process to exchange control of the state between those forces who already have power, which is not the African working class. I want to speak a bit on something that Chairman Omalia Sitela has talked about, and that is the fact, you know, because it's directly related, and that's the fact that that we tend to function to our own detriment too often, as if there's been an end to history. And let me clarify that. Because during the 1960s, you know, you had revolution, the 1950s, 1960s, there was revolution, fought, you know, all across the world. Africans and other oppressed peoples, understood the need to overturn our colonial oppression, understood the need to overturn this relationship, with white imperialist power. However, at some juncture, you know, at the juncture that we were given a flag independence, and in some other places like the U.S., so-called integration, it was as if there was an end to history. We had arrived, you know, or at least that's what we understood, you know. First of all, when we talk about flag independence, it was just that, you know, we got a flag and, you know, a statement that we're now free, right? But the economy, you know, in Africa was still controlled by our imperialist masters, not just in Africa, but the economies in African communities, you know, in places like the U.S. and other places outside of Africa, you know, was still controlled by imperialist powers. You know, the colonial lines that were drawn by the imperialist powers for their own interest, you know, all over Africa remained intact following flag independence. So that's what it was. It was just flag independence. You get a flag and you get an Independence Day to celebrate, but you don't get self-determination. You don't get complete control over your own lives, over our own lives again. That doesn't come with flag independence, hasn't come with the so-called independence that we're supposed to have, right? And on the other side, with integration, you know, integration was just as treacherous because first of all. The whole question of integration makes the assumption that the problem that we have as African people, all the problems that we have, it assumes that they came as a result of being separated from white folks, you know, like at one point we were all together with white folks and that's when everything was cool. But the reality is that our problem as African people came when we came into contact with white folks. That's when we lost self-determination. You know, it was the attack on Africa when white folks came and attacked Africa and kidnapped African people and stole African resources that we began to have the problems that we have now. That's where it came from. You know, that's when we lost self-determination. And when you talk about integration, you know, this was also a serious assault on our consciousness, because those who put forward integration as a solution, you know, tell us that that we can't do for ourselves, that instead our success is based on our proximity to white folks. You know, it not only did that, it divided us from Africa. You know, so we begin to call ourselves ridiculous things like African Americans or Black Brits or Afro Spaniards and things like that. You know, which is just completely ridiculous. You know, so but the main point that I want to make is that with this, with integration and with independence or flag independence, there was some perceived into history like we've made it now, you know, we're free. And the question now is to make freedom work, you know. And that's how we can come to the conclusion that the problem that we have as African people is that we have some kind of legacy of corruption, that our leaders and by extension our entire people are inherently corrupt. You know, that's how we can come to that kind of conclusion, because, you know, if you believe that we're free, if you believe that we've now, you know, got control of our own lives, then we have to come to some kind of conclusion as to why is it that we're still having all of these problems. And so that's why, you know, folk can come to us and tell us, well, you know, your leaders are just inherently corrupt, when the reality is that we are not free, that we haven't regained self-determination. But the thing is, if you think that we are, then you think that we can solve the problem through elections, through electing the right leaders, you know, getting rid of these corrupt leaders, and electing the right ones, you know, that can be a solution. You know, that's the only way that you can come to that kind of conclusion if you think that we're free. And you know, again, when you're talking about elections, you're talking about a nonviolent contest or nonviolent contests between the imperialist powers for control of the state. And so the elections are not capable of bringing power into the hands of the oppressed. And it's notwithstanding the fact that that they allow you to put your name on a ballot and that they allow you to check off somebody's name and say you vote for them. You know, you cannot win freedom through elections. Malcolm X talked about that. Talked about the ballot of the bullet, right? But the reality is, you can't win freedom through an electoral process. It doesn't come like that. In most cases, first of all, in most cases, revolutionary forces don't even have the ability to get onto the ballot. You know, and revolution is definitely never going to be on the ballot, not under an imperialist system, not under a world capitalist system. And even in cases like in South Africa, where a force like the PAC is able to get on the ballot, the imperialists put everything they've got behind their guy, behind their force. The imperialists will send, you know, like in South Africa, in occupied Zania, where, you know, the imperialists sent, you know, all they sent the campaign organizers, they sent all kinds of resources down to South Africa to make sure that Nelson Mandela won the election, following the end of the apartheid regime. And the imperialist powers continue to put everything they've got behind the ANC, you know, because that's their guy. Because the ANC is the force there that will ensure that continues to work in the interest of the imperialist powers, regardless of the fact that you don't have direct white rule there. You have you now have a force of Africans, the African petty bourgeoisie, because that's a class, it's a specific class that these forces come from. The African petty bourgeoisie, a black middle class, who function as administrators for the same system, and so the elections are a process to even in Africa in general, the elections are a process to change over which neocolonial force is in power. And in some cases, like I said before, you have an imperialist power who's behind one force and a different imperialist power behind the other force. So it ends up being some kind of a struggle, a proxy struggle. The elections become a proxy struggle for control of African resources by the U.S. and France or by other forces, but the point is it becomes a process for struggling for power but not for power to change hands in the sense of being put into the hands of the African masses, but to change hands among imperialist powers. And in the cases like in places like the U.S. or other imperialist countries, to change hands between different sectors of the white ruling class in that state. So that's what you're looking at when you're looking at elections. And that's not to say that you can't, that's not to say that we can't win elections. But what it is to say is that even when you do win the election, that is only, even in cases where we can win the election, that's only part of the struggle. Because if you win the election in a world capitalist system, if you win an election in a particular area, then what you now have done is you've come to the helm of a system that is designed by the imperialist and even controlled economically by the imperialist. It's a capitalist system, and so winning an election, under a capitalist system means that you now administering a capitalist system. So that's not the solution there. It's not the end all there. And that's not to say don't participate in the electoral process. We do, but we do recognizing that it has its limitations. That what has to happen for African people to have freedom, for the African working class to have power, is a revolutionary process. And the elections are a means to afford those objectives, but it cannot be a substitute for revolutionary struggle. It cannot be a substitute for a revolution. So there's much more that has to be done, and we see that when we see cases of forces like Patrice Lumumba, when we see cases of forces like Kwame Nkrumah, we see that. We saw, in Congo, when Patrice Lumumba became the prime minister in Congo, the reality is that he did not have with him a revolutionary organization, a revolutionary party that recognized the need of the African working class to lead. He didn't have that. Kwame Nkrumah didn't have a revolutionary party, a vanguard party working in the interest of the African working class. He didn't have that. They had organizations that did not recognize the need of the African working class to lead. And so as a result, you have these forces, these neo-colonial forces, these petty bourgeois forces who are in your camp but working against you. In the interest of the imperialists, because the petty bourgeoisie, the African petty bourgeoisie, is an unreliable force. It is a force that can meet its own interests short of the meeting the revolutionary aspirations of the African masses. It can get rich. An African petty bourgeois force can get rich, you know, while the majority of our people remain poor. That's what you're looking at when you're looking at a Thabo Mbeki, when you're looking at a Zuma, when you're looking at a Nelson Mandela or Tejan Kaba, when you're looking at, you know, forces like in Kenya, like Mwai Kibaki and Odinga, that's what you're looking at. You're looking at the African petty bourgeoisie. You're looking at these forces who can meet their own needs short of meeting the needs of the African masses. And so what has to happen is you have to have a party based in the African working class, working in the interests of the African working class, with an ideology that recognizes an ideology, African internationalism, that recognizes the fact that the African working class must lead, that the African working class must lead, because it's the only force that cannot meet its own interest short of a complete revolutionary transformation. So that's what you need, an African internationalist party. So that when you work in the electoral process, you're working at, see, the main value, one of the main values of an election, of the electoral process, of participating in the electoral process from the perspective of a revolutionary organization, is the propaganda value. Participating in the electoral process allows a revolutionary party to put forward a revolutionary program to the masses of African people. The African People's Socialist Party, when it's participated in electoral processes here in the United States, has used it for that purpose. The purpose wasn't necessarily to win the election. If we won, then that would have been good, you know. But the reality is, we recognize that the electoral process itself cannot bring us freedom. The purpose of participating in the electoral process was to raise, to put forward this National Democratic Revolutionary Program, a program that could unite, that put forward the interests of the African working class and can unite broad sectors of the African people to it, you know, to this program, a progressive program, you know, a national democratic program that put forth the national interests of African people. That's what's necessary, and that's one of the main values of an elections. And this is throughout. You know, in some places, yeah, it is possible to win an election. You know, but in a lot of cases, the main value of the electoral process is to use it for propaganda value, to put forward a National Democratic Revolutionary Program to the masses of African people. But you have to have a party. You have to have a party that sees past just an electoral process to a revolutionary process, to take state power and put it in the hands of the African working class in alliance with the poor peasantry, that sees the seizure of state power, and not just administering the system in place, you know, and trying to make a nicer situation for African people, you know, try to make you know, to come into power and put down poverty programs. No, the thing that we have to do is to seize state power and to have state power in the hands of the African working class in alliance with the poor peasantry, and overturn the parasitic relationship with imperialist white power, and eradicate the borders, the colonial borders that have never worked in our interest. That is the solution, the final solution for African people, is to do that, to win state power. And you can use the electoral process in that process of winning state power, but it isn't the solution. It isn't the end all. The solution is to win state power. The solution is to make a revolutionary struggle to win state power under the leadership of the African working class and poor peasantry. So wanted to say that, and we're gonna go to a break and come back with some more discussion. We're gonna come back with a guest, comrade Andrew Mwangura, who is a trade union leader in Kenya, and we're gonna be talking about the electoral process in Kenya and you know what's happening there. So stay tuned for more here on Africa Live on GuruRadio.com.
Legendary foundation, sending this one out to the people, you know what I mean? My people's in the streets of Illidale, streets of New York City, you know what I'm saying? From the streets of Jamaica to the ghettos of London, word up. People's in the struggle in Paris, Cuba, South Africa, word up. Worldwide, Roots Crew, hey, yeah. Open your minds to this one, feel it, feel it, join the rim.
This morning I woke up in a curfew. Oh God, I was a prisoner too. Yeah, could not recognize the faces standing over me. They were all dressed in uniforms of brutality.
Y'all, the past like some type of gun law. They come in the night, then block out every border you could run for. Me, I'm a rocket launcher and militant monster. I'm self-sponsor. I light up the mic just like ganja. Black thought in the flesh, no imposter. Power hilly, thoroughbred soldiers ain't with the same silly shit that's uncertain. Wrapped inside a steel curtains, networking our shoulders, backs, and necks, hurting for real. So be supreme or just remain a mere person. Yo, you can find knowledge yourself or keep searching. Whoever in the crevice is thirsty, working beneath the surface. Y'all know the purpose, keep the streets burning. Yeah.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Mbinga Zimbabwe, and I have with me on the air Comrade Andrew Mwangura, who is a trade union activist in Kenya. Uhuru, comrade, it's good to have you here on the air with us.
Uhuru, comrade. Thank you very much.
Yes, yes. And we want to talk, I've been talking a bit today about the question of the electoral process and in general, and its limitations, and in terms of as a solution for African people. I want to I want to talk a bit about the situation there in Kenya. But can we begin just for our listeners who don't know much about Kenya? Can you tell our listeners a bit about the history of Kenya?
Okay, Kenya is a country situated in the east coast of Africa. In the north, we have Somalia and Ethiopia. And the east side is the Indian Ocean. Southern side, Tanzania. Western side is Uganda. And then in south, northwest is Sudan. Sudan is a relative country in the continent of Africa. Kenya is composed of 35 million people. That's the population of Kenya. And it gained its independence in 1963 from the British colonies. Kenya, majority are Christians, and there is a minority of Muslims and other religions. Kenya is the birthplace of Mau Mau uprising, and Kenya is also the birthplace of mankind, all human beings in the world. You can say Kenya is the cradle of human being, or the cradle of humanity in the world, and all creation of God.
And can you tell our listeners just a bit about? I know some of them, most of us should have heard about the Mau Mau, but could you tell our listeners just a bit about the Mau Mau and who they were?
Okay, Mau Mau uprising came upon in the early 50s, that is between 1951-52 up to 1963. But I'm afraid to say that they were betrayed by the government of Kenya, Kenyatta government, and Moi government, and now Mwai Kibaki government. They fought very well, they fought a good fight. And but during the war, they managed to kill more than 32 white men and 400 Africans who were the traitors. And they came upon fighting the white man because they wanted freedom of the land. Because the land was taken up by the white men, and they were left to be hungry and starving along the streets of Nairobi and the countryside. Mau Mau up to date are suffering. The Mau Mau survivors, of whom age about 70 years old, are the most poorest freedom fighters, I think, in Africa and in the world, I can say so. And this is because of the imperialist government of Kenyatta and Moi, and as well as Mwai Kibaki.
Now, how were conditions in Kenya following so-called independence?
It's not an independence. Well, you can say it's a flag independence, not true independence.
Yes.
For black people, or the poor man, or the work for the workers. It's only independent for the rich people, but not for the poor people. You can say Kenya is not a euro. It's not a euro in Kenya. We can say so.
Yes, yes. Under Kibaki's regime, before the elections, what kind of conditions were African people living in Kenya?
It's the same as it was 30 years ago. There was no changes, nothing changed, nothing changed, except the good things went to the rich people and the bad things went to the poor people. The richer came to be richer, and the poor went to be poorer and poorer. Following the recent riots within cities, major towns in Kenya, I can say now, I'm afraid to say, people are going to be suffer too much, not only in Kenya, but the rest of the Africa region, that is Somalia, Burundi, Southern Sudan, and the Congo Kinshasa, that is Democratic Republic of Congo. Because most of these three countries in the region depend on the pipeline of Mombasa Port, bringing out cargo from foreign countries that relief cargo. And also, this region, they also depend on peace in Nairobi, because most of the major international offices are based in Nairobi. United Nations offices are also based in Nairobi.
Okay, and just to get into the whole electoral process that happened recently, can you first of all tell our listeners who were the different players in this election?
First of all, Kenya, they have got about 10 million voters, registered voters, under the Electoral Commission of Kenya. And Kenya election being conducted by the Electoral Commission of Kenya, which is under the chairmanship of Mr. Kivutu. Kivutu is a lawyer, and the majority of the commissioners are lawyers, but are come from the side of Mike Kibaki. These are not independent commissioners. They are being appointed by Mr. Kibaki or the president. We didn't appoint them, we didn't vote for them. So, and the political parties are more than 200 political parties, but who stood up for president election, for office of the president, were 9 of them. That is including Raila Odinga and Mike Kibaki and others. There are about 3 major political parties in Kenya. That is Orange Democratic Movement, ODM, and Orange Democratic Movement Kenya. It's a faction of ODM. And PNU, Party for National Unity, this Mike Kibaki's party. And there are some small political party groups, HPPG, composed of about 13 political parties. So when the election was called upon, that was the 27th last month, December 2007, the election was peaceful, but not fairly. I'm saying not as fairly, because during the election time, there were more than 37,000 observers, international and locally. But in some voting polling stations, were not allowed to enter. And this polling station, were within the central region, and the central region is where Mike Kibaki comes. You know, Kenya has got about 8 regions. There's Coast region, Rift Valley region, Nyanza region, that's Western region, Central region, Northeastern region, Eastern region, and Nairobi region. All of them are 8 regions. And Mike Kibaki comes from a central region. And all 6 regions were opposed to the current government. And they voted out the current government, including all cabinet ministers, former cabinet ministers were all voted out. And when the monitoring groups and observers from local countries and international foreign countries were not allowed to enter, that means that it wasn't fair, although it was peaceful. There were no fighting, no riots.
No, go ahead. You've got it.
So one same thing which came up is that majority who were the poor, the masses, workers and peasants, they voted out the government of Mike Kibaki. But on last Sunday, when the electoral commissioner was declaring, he went straight to the state house and declared President Kibaki as the winner, which it was done silently, secretly, without other media allowed to still go in. The only media which was allowed to go in and cover that, it was the Kenya Broadcasting Corporation, of which is a state-owned broadcaster. The other local media, they were not allowed. In fact, they didn't know about it. They just were informed and passed after 1 hour, 2 hours, that the president has been declared the winner. And that was illegal. And so Mike Kibaki is in office illegally. We didn't vote for him. The majority didn't vote for him.
Now, I understand that even the there was some forces in the Electoral Commission that have even stated that, right? That that the people actually voted Kibaki out.
Yes, but in fact, the some of commissioners, they don't believe the result. They say they are not sure of the result, of which means if the commission, member of the commission, they say that they are not sure of the result, this means that the declaration was not proper. It was illegal also from the chairman. And this is what brought about violent riots all over the country, burning and looting, killing one another. And when Kibaki saw this, he uses the police force. There's a police all over the country, in all major cities, a heavy security guard, police officers, paramilitary police, and the armed forces. People are not allowed to, the reporters or media or media house are not allowed to take live coverage. What they have to do is to record and take it to the security, and then after the security allow them to put it in the air. And then we are not allowed, we the masses, we are not allowed to gather in majority. We are also not allowed to call upon political rallies. Political rallies are banned all over the country.
Now, I want to ask a bit about the I understand that the candidates were campaigning in a way to divide the people among ethnic lines.
Yeah, that is the politics of Kenya. Politics in Kenya are tribal politics. But this time around, they decided yes, they are going to divide tribal, but they are going to vote out President Mwai Kibaki in all regions. So President Mwai Kibaki was voted in by his own tribe of Kikuyu. And the Kikuyu tribe was only 2.5 million against 8 million, of which people do not agree with that numbers, because the majority or other tribes whom are more than 7 million, they cannot, the Kibaki only tribe cannot vote, cannot win, because there are about 2.5 million from the Kibaki region. And these are Kikuyu, Meru, and Embu.
Now, can you talk a bit about who Raila Odinga is politically? Because I've heard, you know, the statements that, you know, like that he's, you know, the political alternative. But it seems to me like if folks are dividing the people among ethnic lines, that nobody's moving in the interest of the masses. So could you tell our folks about, could you tell our listeners about who Odinga is?
Odinga is the son, I think he must be the last born son of Jaramogi Oginga Odinga. Jaramogi Oginga Odinga, the father of Raila Odinga, was the opposition leader since independence. He was also a freedom fighter. He passed away about 5 years ago. And during that time, Raila started politicking while he was a university student in East Germany, because he went to East Germany. When he came back, Kenyatta government didn't employ him, because they say that he is a Marxist. Because Raila is a group of Marxists in this country, in East Africa region. And they were not allowed, they were not employed, they were not allowed to speak out, they were not allowed to organize political rallies. But with the pressure of university students and workers and other political groups in the country, he was allowed to join political parties. Then he was detained for about, I think he's the longest serving detainee in Kenya. He has served an detention camp for more than 15 years without trial, without taken to court. When he came back, and when he started joining political parties, there was a lot of pressure from the university students, workers, the labor movement in the country. He came to power, and then the capitalists didn't allow him to go near the power. So he started mobilizing his community from the Western region, because he comes from the Western region, and it's a Luo community from the Great Lake region, or we can call it the Nyanza region. During that time, he got popularity within the East Africa community. Then other people, when they started to realize that Moi, because Moi was the second president of Kenya, started to realize that Moi was doing wrong. And Moi is just lying to people, didn't give the people the true picture of what's going on. People marched behind or support Raila. So started the support, Raila got the support from all over the country. He went to Coast region, Eastern region, Northeastern region, and Western region, as well as Nairobi region, the central district, where he's a member of parliament in Nairobi area, in a small constituency known as the Langata. In fact, in the last vote, he got majority of the votes, and he has been an MP for a long time in Langata constituency. This is the Nairobi area. So for all those years, Raila has been a thorn in the flesh of the capitalist.
Now, I understand that initially forces like the U.S. and Britain congratulated Kibaki's victory, though the story has changed now. Can you say something about that?
Yes, when the voters were called upon, when the chairman declared Mwai Kibaki the president, George Bush came out and said, the president of America, and said he supports Mwai Kibaki. And also the British government also went out and supported Mwai Kibaki. But then, when people started to make a lot of noise, they started questioning it, and then they backpedaled. And they say, no, they don't support Mwai Kibaki, and they think that there's something wrong with that. The vote must be recounted. Now, no one is supporting Mwai Kibaki. All over the world, nobody is supporting Mwai Kibaki, except Yoweri Museveni of Uganda. But all the political leaders in Africa region and from Western countries and the Eastern European region, Eastern Far East region, are not supporting Mwai Kibaki's government. And it's because of the masses. The people are angry about it. People are making a lot of noise, rioting, protesting. And now, you know, nowadays there's the internet. We are doing what we call emailing campaign, sending letters to whoever we know worldwide not to support Mwai Kibaki government.
And I understand that Mwai Kibaki had gotten some support from forces like Uhuru Kenyatta's party and some of the other forces there, right?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. You know, Uhuru Kenyatta must support Mwai Kibaki because he's of the same tribe. And Uhuru Kenyatta is the son of a land grabber. Kenyatta, you know, outside world thinks that Kenyatta was a hero, but Kenyatta wasn't a hero. Kenyatta was a land grabber. Kenyatta was a traitor. And as well as Uhuru also is a grand land grabber. He grabbed masses of land and left other people without land. While I'm talking to you right now, I'm a squatter in my own land. My father is also a squatter in his own land. My grandfather is also a squatter in his own land. And our land was grabbed by Kenyatta family. So they must support a land grabber so that we, the masses, we cannot get our rights, of which we have been fighting for a long time. We need our land back, which was grabbed by the white men. But when white men went back to his homeland, the land was taken back again by a black ruler, that's Kenyatta. And Kenyatta kept holding that land and divided the land to other rich people and left us poor and poorer now. That's why you see land grabbers must support the Kibaki government, because Kibaki himself is a land grabber. Uhuru Kenyatta is a land grabber and the son of a land grabber.
Now, I'm glad you raised that question, because oftentimes, you know, folks outside of Kenya think that Jomo Kenyatta was some kind of progressive force. And even, you know, it's been said that he led the Mau Mau, which, you know, I think is something that has to be dispelled. You know,
no, that's not correct. Kenyatta was not a member of Mau Mau. Kenyatta was a member of Kenya Central, Kikuyu Central Association. KCA, Kikuyu Central Association, but not Mau Mau. He himself said that he himself one time he said that he doesn't belong to Mau Mau, and that is correct. He doesn't belong to a Mau Mau, and he wasn't a Mau Mau. He was a traitor.
Yes. Yes. Now, you raised the land question as an issue, but was anybody in during this electoral process, was anybody talking about that, the land question?
You know, the root cause of crime in Kenya is land. Land is the biggest problem in Kenya. It's our own land, grabbed by our own people, but not by the white man. Our own, very own people. The leaders, the ruling class, the political class. That's the biggest problem.
So, but was there any force during this electoral process who raised that question as an issue?
Yes, people tried to ask the electoral commission many questions, but the electoral commission just brushed them out. That's why we are calling upon the international community to pressurize the government of Mwai Kibaki to allow a mediator to come in and to allow a transitional government. The transitional government will stand in for 3 months. During that time, we start asking many questions to come up with the answers of how the votes were stolen and the recount of all votes in the country. And then we started I think the issue of the land will be addressed properly.
Okay, and I want to go ahead and take a break here. I want to let folks know though that you can participate in this discussion by emailing us in at dj@uhururadio.com. Or you can call in and speak with us at 727. It's country code 001. Then it's 727-565-1599. Or you can call us at our Skype ID, which is Uhuru Space Radio. And if you don't have Skype, you can go to Skype.com and download it for free. And you can speak to us through your computer through Skype. For free from anywhere in the world. We're going to take a brief break and come back with more on this discussion on the elections in Kenya and the violence surrounding it. And so stay tuned for more here on Africa Live.
Coming, freedom is coming. Sierra Leone. Be strong today for tomorrow. No matter what tomorrow might be, lift your head above water. I see we've been crying all these years. No more time to waste again. Keep the smile upon your face, 'cause it's time to celebrate.
Listen up, brothers and sisters. The black man has not always been a slave. The black man and the woman have not always been a slave. First, our great God created the black woman and the black man as the first on this planet Earth. The black race defined the laws of the universe that still govern man's behavior, even until this very day. But what happened? Out of the Caucasus Mountains came a very destructive race that ended up destroying our black civilization in the Garden of Eden.
Ancient Kemet, Egypt. Ancient Israel.
Hindu Kush, India. Harappan. Eventually, they put our people into slavery, killing over 210 million Africans. And we should educate our youth, teach our youth that this heinous crime against humanity shall never happen again. Never again. Never again. Never again. Never again. Never again. Never again. The black race will never allow to happen again.
Never again. Never, never again. The black monks. Hola.
Uhuru, and welcome back to Africa Live on UhuruRadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we've been talking about the elections in Kenya, the violence surrounding the elections in Kenya, and we've been talking with Comrade Andrew Mwangura, who is a trade union activist there in Kenya. I want to, again, let our listeners know that you can participate in this discussion that we're having. You can email us at dj@uhururadio.com, or you can call in and speak with us at the country code 001 727 565-1599 or at our Skype ID, which is Uhuru Space Radio. And if you don't have Skype, you can go to Skype.com and download it for free and speak to us through your computer, through Skype, for free from anywhere in the world. So again, Comrade Mangura, it's good to have you on with us. And
okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask, you know, in terms of the violence that has come following this election, can you tell us like how it began?
No, the root cause of the violence is that it started during the taking of the tally of the votes. That was on the 28th, 29th, and 30th. People were waiting for the tally of the votes, the results, but the Electoral Commission kept people waiting. And while people were asking for what is going on, the Electoral Commission told the people that they are also waiting for results to come from other regions. That was Central Region and some part of Coast Region. And this got a lot of questions. How come results from far away remote areas were available in the Electoral Commission's headquarters, and the results from just a nearby region, that is Central Region. Central Region is nearby Nairobi headquarters, the ECK. So when the questions started popping up, that's how people, tension broke. That's how people lose temper, and that's how people started realizing that there's something fishy going on. So on the last day of the mayhem, on the first day of the mayhem, what happened is that when the Electoral Commission started giving and counting votes of the results, they were not corresponding with the result sheets from other agents, because the political party leader or political parties have got their own agents in all constituencies of Kenya. Voting constituencies of Kenya are 210. And one constituency can have about 10 or 30 polling stations. So when the tally did not match from other parts of the region, that's when people started making noise. People were angry about it. And when people came to be angry about it, they were raising out pressure, trying to let the state know, the government to know that they can't wait for long, and that they have realized that the government is trying to steal out votes, because it beats reason to, for example, in one concern, the Coast Region where I come from, electoral voters, registered electoral voters were less than 10,000. So it came strange that President Mwai Kibaki got more than 25,000 votes from that part of it, has got less than 10,000 voters, registered voters. That's when people came up and make a lot of noise. And it was wasn't in only Coast Region, but in other parts of Kenya. So people, they lose their temper, started rioting, and then. But we came to learn that all the riots were not from only people only, but they were state mandated. The state, they said to put the country in havoc and create a state of emergency. Mm-hmm. As I'm talking to you now, Nyanza region where Raila camp is under curfew, 6 to 6 curfew. That's down curfew. Which means that it was a state mandate riot, not from their people.
I want to ask, like, it's been said that the police have been massacring African people. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. According to what we think is that why. People were asking, and they said, people asking, how come this region, this vote, and this region got this vote? You, Mr. President, where you come from, you didn't garner more than 25,000 votes. How come in another region you got 75,000 votes? And that same region has got less than 60,000 registered voters. But the president kept mum, and the state also kept mum. So we think that it was somehow the government is inside the riots in some parts of the country. It provoked the masses. I think you understand. It provoked the masses by doing fishy things. So it knew very well that the masses will be angry about that, and then the masses start banning each and everything, and then the masses start fighting each and everyone. But they were only targeting the Kikuyu community, not all communities. They were only targeting the Kikuyu community because we understand that the Kikuyu community were betraying other people, but not all Kikuyu communities.
So has it been a widespread kind of thing, or is it focused on? You said it's focused on the Kikuyu communities, but is it
community? But most people lost their life. Not only Kikuyu community lost their life, but many people lost their life. So those who were shot down by the police, let's say in the Kisumu region, whereupon 40 people lost their life. And today we have got a message from that region. 4 people were shot down by the police today from Kisumu, that western region, and the Mombasa, that coast region. 23 people during the route lost their life also. And the Nairobi area, a total of about 300 people lost their life, and 280,000 people are homeless, displaced people, running here and there. They don't know where to go. Not only Kikuyu, but other community also.
Has this had any impact on the surrounding area, surrounding Kenya?
It's a big. It has got a big impact, in fact, in the major cities, and this is Kisumu, Mombasa, Nairobi, Kericho, Eldoret, and Nakuru. It's a big impact on those regions, on these major cities, and there's now what I'm talking to. There's no movement of transport from one region to other region. From, let's say, from, you know, Mombasa is the hub, is a major port in East Africa. There's no truck running out from Mombasa, moving to up country and to the nearest countries, that's Uganda, Somalia, Sudan, and other countries. And within the country, also within Kenya, there's no transport from one region to another region. And in some towns, you cannot move out. Like me, I was inside my place, my friends. When the drought started, I was held within the Mombasa center because I don't come from Mombasa town. I come about 60 kilometers south of Mombasa, north of Mombasa. I was held in one place for 4 days. I cannot move from that place. There was no movement of motor cars. I just moved yesterday for about 4 days or 5 days inside. I cannot move out. I didn't have access to the internet. You cannot go, because internet in Kenya, you have to go to the town center. Well, then people were not moving to the town center. Those who are within the town center, they were not moving out of town center to where they come from. And those who are out of the town center, they cannot come within the town center. And those from other towns, they cannot come to other towns. Where you are, you stay where you are. And another impact is the food. Because Kenya is an agricultural country, but parts of Kenya like Mombasa and the coast region depend from agricultural commodity from the Rift Valley or from the region. Now that there's no transport, movement of transport, food or agricultural products cannot come all the way to the coast region. So people are dying from hunger. There's no food, no nothing, you see.
Now,
there's a big impact on that, yeah.
Now,
not only in Kenya, but in the central and the central and East Africa region, economically and politically, there's a big impact of the rights. What about big loss or trouble, economical collapse? Now, right now, for example, in Uganda, a few days ago, when petrol, a liter of petrol was going for $1. Now it goes for $5 a liter of fuel in Uganda and as well as Rwanda and that region country. And to find that commodity in Kenya is now the big problem. You cannot find fuel only in Kenya now. And that means that when it will be available, it will also, the prices will go up.
So, has there been any talk about forces like the British or the U.S. Coming in to Kenya? Has there been any discussion around that?
No, there's no discussion of bringing U.S. forces to Kenya. But what we understand that I operate within the port of Mombasa and the airport of Mombasa. I've been noticing that white men are running away of court. They are running away, and they have already the diplomatic mission in Kenya. They have already set out alert to all foreigners based in Kenya to move out of Kenya. And whenever you see a white man saying that, it means that there's problem coming. Maybe today, tomorrow, you never know. Because they have already issued alert. Move out of Kenya. Now white men are moving out of Kenya. Tourists are moving out of Kenya. And those who have been based in Kenya are moving out. Yesterday there were about 17 buses. And one bus can carry a passenger of 43 passengers. So that means more than 400 people left Mombasa Airport yesterday morning. I was there at the airport. So we understand, according to our experience, whenever you see a white man moving out of Africa in time of drought, this means that anytime anything can happen.
Yes.
But we haven't heard of any forces. But as we know, Americans and the British are nearby here, and the French are nearby here. They've been here since September 11. They have been operating within Indian Ocean, Gulf region, Red Sea, and the Gulf of Aden, trying to fight terrorism. So just press a button, and then they come. They're not far away from our waters here. But I think when they come here, they are not going to fight anyone, but they're coming here just to save other white men based here, but not to save black men. That has been always like that.
Yes.
I think you know about them. Yeah.
Yes. And even in cases where they do try to save an African, it's somebody who's working for them, you know, so in order that they can keep stealing the resources from Africa.
Yeah, that's how they do. And if they're going to save to help a black man, that might be the president.
Yes.
Because the president, Mwai Kibaki, is one of them.
Yes. I want to ask, is there anybody on the ground, any organization, any force on the ground that is calling for unity across ethnic lines to unite the poor Africans against the neo-colonial puppets like Mwai Kibaki? Is there anybody who's uniting, who's working to unite African people across ethnic lines to do that?
Now, what I can say now, Kenya, all tribes in Kenya are united now, right now, except the Kikuyu tribe. But majority, Kenya, we've got two tribes. Tribes of the poor, and the tribe of the rich
yes.
people. So all poor men are now united. According to what I've seen during the riots, this means that all poor people are united. The tribe of the poor are all united, and they're all against the rich men. Since the war started, they're all crying out for peace. But nobody was crying out for justice, and no one was crying for equal rights and justice.
Yes.
In fact, yesterday, civil organization, they met at Nairobi, and tomorrow we'll be meeting in Mombasa to settle the protest. That now that we are asking not for peace, we are asking for equal rights and justice. And the coalition, the government of Kenya is ready to set up a coalition government. The Americans are here asking Mwai Kibaki, and the Britons are here asking Mwai Kibaki to set up a coalition government. But we are saying we are not for a coalition government. We do not support the coalition government. What we support is a transition government of 3 months. Count all votes to know how many, who got what went wrong, and then if there's a re-election, we re-elect whom we want. And then we're going to organize workers, because we are organizing workers to stand up strong, not to be fooled around again by the rich people or by the capitalists. Because the capitalists are the root cause of this, all what is happening now. No rich person or no capitalist was shorted, but the workers were shorted, because the workers were caught between the fire. Were caught during the riots, were the one who were on the ground, shot upon by the policemen. The poor man, the house of the poor man went on fire, but no house of the rich man went on fire. There's a heavy security guard along the rich people's dwelling places.
Most of the time
the rich people are on their private cars. We the masses, the poor people, using private transport. We have no movement because the old private transport are on standstill. So we are suffering. The rich people are not suffering. They can move to the airport. They can move whenever they want to move because they are using their own motor cars under police escort.
Yeah, and it seems to me that what is needed there in Kenya, just like everywhere else in the world where African people are, is an organization led by the African workers and poor people that can take on defeating the neo-colonial leaders, no matter whether they're Kikuyu or Luo, you know, and overturning this relationship, you know, where these forces, these few forces like Kibaki, go and hand over all of our resources, all of our wealth to Britain and the U.S., you know, and so there needs to be a force, you know. It seems to me, based in the African workers and peasants, who would overturn that relationship and that will take control of Kenya's resources, but not just Kenya's resources, all of Africa's resources, for the benefit of the majority.
Yeah, that's what we are trying to do. So, because since the beginning of last year, we are moving up and down, trying to educate people about the resources. In fact, the fishing industry, mining industry, and tourism industry, agricultural industry. Because, as you know, the most government of Africa government, the leadership is taking out resources to foreign countries, and the masses are left behind to be poor and poor. For example, fishing industry, more foreign fishing vessels are allowed to fish within our waters and take away whatever they got, and they take it to a European market or Far East market, that is Asian market, and then we are left poor. They fish here by being used a license of fishing, they say, for 1 year for only $3,000. They can fish whatever they want to fish, and they take it away. You see, that's what we are starting. We see the beginning of last year, we have been moving up from Somalia, Kenya, and Tanzania, and the Mozambique also, that is the southern part of Africa, Seychelles and Mauritius. And then mid of this year will be in Madagascar. Trying to waken up people, not let our fishing resources to go easily to foreign countries. Then maybe in the last part of this year, we are moving to the Gulf of Guinea. Gulf of Guinea is Angola, Congo, Ghana, Nigeria, Cape Verde, Togo, and some parts of West Africa region. It's composed of about 11 countries in the Gulf of Guinea. We are meeting people over there in the last part of this year, trying to waken them up to understand that our fishing resources are going out to foreign countries. And we are being left behind poor. Those who benefit from that, they are just government officers. they've signed a lot of agreements with the European Union countries to fish in our waters. They've also signed agreements with the, without consultation, I mean, they've signed agreements, the government officials in Africa signed agreements with foreign countries without consultation with the community, without consultation with other interested parties, like the coastal fishing community. So we're trying to wake up other people in Africa to understand that our sources are going out, fishing sources are going out, and the beneficiaries are foreigners and the government officials. And we are also doing a campaign against mining, of calming mining by the Canadian company and the Chinese company. They are doing mining in Kenya and some parts of Tanzania and as well as Sudan and some parts of Congo. We are trying to welcome people in this video that illegal fishing, illegal mining, illegal logging of timber, not to be allowed to go, even if your government is concerned. But you are not consulted by your government when they give permission for foreign mining companies to mine in your region. You are not consulted by your government when the government set up sending fishing permits, give a fish permit to foreign companies. You are not consulted by your government when your government came in contact with other companies to take out oil or fuel from your country. That's what we are doing to try the matter. That illegal, we don't allow illegal fishing in Africa, illegal logging of timber, and illegal mining of diamond and other mineral resources. And that's our agenda, and that's our plan. People to wake up. We call it PUSA, People Understanding and Awareness Program of the Sea. Because all these resources are taken up by the sea. Yes. So we, because I come from a seamen organization, we at sea, we see what is happening on ships, we see what is happening at sea, and we load or carry what has been stolen from Africa, taken aboard the ships, and taken to foreign land.
I want to ask, comrade, how can folks in other areas assist in the work that you're doing there in Kenya? I know that there have been some mobilizations in places like Britain, Africans, you know, struggling to end, you know, Britain's relationship with Kenya and whatnot. How can Africans in other places around the world and our other allies in other places around the world do things to help the work that you're doing there in Kenya? Comrade, can you hear me? Uhuru, comrade, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me, comrade? Uhuru, comrade, can you hear me? We're going to take a short break here and try to resolve the sound issues that we're having, the connection issues that we're having. So we'll be right back here on the Africa Live on thehururadio.com.
Oh, ooh, you know how it goes.
Yes, Spawn Bay.
C-Los.
I like this one.
727 to build it.
Yeah. Omavi.
That's what you call it.
Don't hold back, man. You know how it goes. Right. In the ghetto.
Crowds coming out calm everywhere I look, man. I see my people struggling, man.
You know how it goes.
I see our mothers having to bury our sons. And you know, I see caskets, man. You told them too many caskets, man.
When you live in the ghetto,
got a woman looking like beast out here,
God.
My brother's locked up in the
a hustle, all they need is a ring or necklace now. Two lovers walking by holding hands with their matching bling on. Damn. Somebody tell the shorty that the pops just ain't gon' be home. Man, damn. He was all about his beers, now his kids and his wife all alone. Let the crabs out the bucket, man. Too many black folks suffering. Crack smokes in the lungs again. In ATL, another black got hung again. I've been hoping, but my hopes on low. We keep voting, but our votes don't go.
Suffering every day till we die. Home no, but still I pray I can flap my wings till I fly. Away at the ghetto where this field is leveled. I don't see no progress playing with these devils. So black people keep muscling. A lot of blood started hungry, man. But without that hustling, more of us stay stuck in the ghetto still struggling. Damn, still looking for a way out. Selling dope shouldn't be the only way out. And I hope Africans come together, make a band like leather before we all get played out. No way.
Out here, man, and this ghetto dog, it's a dead end street, man. It ain't no way out, man. You can't hustle your way out, man. You can't vote your way out, man. The only way out, man, is to fight, man. We want to come together and fight our way out this thing, man. Around the world, man, black folks is 1 billion strong, man. We gonna have to come together and unite, man, so we can fight our way out this thing, man. Listen, man, we got gold, we got diamonds, we got everything we need to live out here, man. But these crackers stealing it from us, man. And
say that's rash, but my people getting played like a jackass. And when I think about it, I ain't the criminal, see you stole me. So the way I see it, you owe me. 42 years since the Birmingham bombing, and I'm still turning pages to see black churches still burning. So excuse me if I ain't interested in ritual, time to get political, yeah. You want me out the country, fine, I'll leave as soon as you get the hell out of mine. I just believe. Yeah, here I stand, yo John Doe about to make Americans scared like I'm the president of Iran. It's Wesley to E. Africa.
you expect? I'm a revolutionary. Man, I don't want the people calm. Time to create 2, 3, many Vietnams. Think I'm joking, yo, I'm serious. We gotta bring down the imperialists. The socialists is coming through. And if you on the wrong side, we coming right through you. Revolution coming soon through your way. By the way, rest in peace, Kwame Ture. There's no time to play, yo. I think somebody better tell him about the great work done by Omali Yeshatella. Courageous fella, bringing back the soul of the body and leader of the African Socialist Party. The first brother that I heard say this phrase, all my revolutionary people help me say, come on. Is Re-Li Du E A
Yeah, the land is ours.
If you touch one, then you touch all.
Come on.
Is where lead to E Africa.
Yeah, the land is ours.
If you touch one, then you touch all.
Yo, the reason why we say that is to remember who we was from way back. Africa, the land is ours. We gonna take it back from the European powers. And I'm here to let you know, all your Uncle Tom and Aunt Jemima's gotta go. Yeah, you sold us for a black capitalism. Right next to slavery, that's the biggest capital prison. Once you take up for the system that enslaved you, you gotta do whatever the hell that they say do. Yeah, you black, but now you speak for whites. You want an example? Look at Condoleezza Rice. You wanna see the best of we? Then learn your history so you can change your destiny. Yeah. Yo, E-Africa, you say it's where led to. Now I'm out like the Mau Mau, Uhuru. Hey, yeah, yo.
Until the philosophy which hold one race superior and another inferior is finally and permanently discredited and abandoned. Everywhere is war. It's a war that until they're no longer first class and second class citizens of any nation, until the color of a man's skin is of no more significance than the color of his eyes. Miss a war that until the basic human rights are equally guaranteed to all without regard to race. It is a war that until that day the dream of lasting peace, world citizenship, rule of international morality will remain but a fleeting illusion to be pursued but never attained. Now everywhere is war. War. And until the ignoble and unhappy regime that hold our brothers in Angola, in Mozambique, South Africa, by human bondage, I've been toppled.
All right, and we're back with Africa Live here on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nyabinga Zimbabwe, and we are talking with Comrade Andrew Mwangura who is a trade union activist in Kenya, and we've been talking about the elections in Kenya as well as the violence surrounding those elections. Comrade, before we left, you were talking about some of the work that your organization was doing in that area. I wanted to ask how Africans in other areas can help with the work that you're doing.
What I think the other parts of Africa can help is to come, join forces together, to come together and to understand that the Chinese have got an agenda with Africa. The U.S. or the Western countries have got an agenda with Africa. But we Africans, we don't have an agenda for our own motherland. So we have to come up and do our agenda. And our agenda is stop illegal fishing in Africa. Stop illegal mining in Africa. Stop illegal logging of timber from Africa. And to stop that, we know that not all foreigners are doing it, but they're doing it with cooperation or with connection with our government, the Africa government. All Africa governments, not only one Africa, but all Africa governments are behind all these illegal mining, illegal logging, and illegal fishing of natural resources of Africa. It has very much to note down that annually, for example, Somalia, which has got no central government for the last 15 years, more than $160 million is being used. Illegal fishing in Somalia costs about $168 million annually. And that money goes to foreign countries. It doesn't go to Somali. Foreign fishing companies, with connection with Kenyan officials, are fishing illegally in Somalia, transferring that fish to Kenyan ports and sent to foreign countries, that is Europe and Asia. And Somalis are dying from hunger. Somalis are dying from gun instability in their country, while foreigners are making a lot of money from illegal fish of Somali waters. Not only in Somalia, but some parts of West Africa region also, there's a lot of illegal fishing. And we are gaining nothing except anger, poverty, ignorance, and instability.
Now, we also have some questions in, comrade. I want folk to be able to get those answered, because we've got a few minutes left. One of those questions, the first one that came in, it says, you said that Jomo Kenyatta was not with the Mau Mau. Who was the real leader of the Mau Mau?
The real leader of Mau Mau is Dedan Wasiorou Kimathi, who was hung by the evil forces on 18th of February 1957 and committed maximum prison. Up to date, nobody knows where his body is. And he was taken to a kangaroo court of law of the British colony, and was sentenced to death by hanging. And he was convicted for illegal handling of a revolver and about 16 rounds of ammunition. And you know, in the laws of this country, since that time up to date, say that if you are found by illegal possession of illegal firearm, you will be sentenced for the only sentence is hanging, and it's under penal code of Kenyan law. So the really leader of Mau Mau was Dedan Wasiorou Kimathi.
And those will
get the chance of attending Africa Socialist International workshop in Ghana later this month, will be have a chance of meeting Sister Evelyn, the daughter of Dedan Kimathi. He'll be there. She will be there. She'll attend that conference in Ghana.
Ah.
And she'll give you the right picture.
Uhuru, that is great. I want to ask, comrade, just in relationship to that, are there any remnants of the Mau Mau left? Is there any forces from the Mau Mau who are still there?
The survivors. You mean survivors?
Yes.
One Marcus Garvey, Becca, Chase Lumumba, Kwame Nkrumah, Kennedy Sosa Bukwe, Bill Parker Raw, and one O'Malley Yeshitilla. O'Malley, his choice. Doing it all the land. Bring that in, man. That's right. Africa is our land.
Shit, homie, liberated, we got the beats. Only the people can make a real revolution, so that's what we serve. All these ass kissing Uncle Tom niggas got no concern. We got nothing to gain off this plantation but making it burn. They should tell her destroyed everything they schools was making us learn. He taught us crackers living good off our wealth they didn't earn. That's why they shoot you in the back as soon as you start making a turn on them.
As we walk towards Africa, as
we walk towards Africa, we stay disciplined 24/7 cause crackers are setting up traps for us. We don't slip when them pretty face dimes throw ass at us. We taking his pride, even the baddest chicken wear a wire. You got Asians approaching you from every angle trying to get you tangled and twisted. But everything we do, stay explicit. Mistake, we'll try to say we trafficking drugs, taking our right to have it come. We still Goombas, get go with our sons and daughters, cause they the future, so they can shoot you today. Another generation to rise from the roots like Goombas. We've been through the worst torture up in Harlem, in Haiti, in London, in Mother Africa. We all starving, so we all brawling. In revolution, we gon' spark it. We reach farther and keep dropping science till we martyrs. To live and die for the people, we be honored. The struggle might be hard, but we are. And that's why we sing.
Living this life is a rebel. Hard living this life.
Struggle might be
hard,
but we hard.
It's hard living this life.
Ooh, comrade. I'm sorry we got disconnected again. I'm going to bring you back on. We only be a few more minutes.
Comrade, turn on, got them soldiers on go.
Could you break that down for me, sir?
I study history and realism. Real when it's real, we should deal with it.
Uhuru, welcome back to Africa Live on uhururadio.com. I'm your host, Nibinga Zimbabwe, and we had a little bit of trouble there, but we've got Comrade Andrew Mangura back on the line. Comrade, before we lost you, you were answering the question in terms of whether there were any survivors left from the Mau Mau. Can you hear me, comrade?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So before we left, you were answering the question whether there were any remnants of the Mau Mau left, whether there were any survivors left from the Mau Mau. But we got cut off before you were able to answer.
Yeah, there are still some survivors of the Mau Mau who might be there. The old age people that are there, they betrayed the government of Kenya, and they still there, and the very old people. Very poor people. So they've been in this country. They fought for this country, but they were nobody caring about them. Kenyan government didn't care about them. Kenyan government and Mugabe government didn't care about them. And the leader, the true leader, Mama, who did much better than Mali, was Yoweri Musi, who was born in 1930. In Nyeri district, the central province of Kenya, on 31st of October 1920, and was hanged. He was put to prison by the colonial British colonial and hanged in February 18, 1927. But after that, no one knows where his body is. But he was taken prison in a committee maximum prison near Nairobi area. And for those who were witnessing, those who were there with him, they said that he was hanged on February 18, 1957. And he was during that time, imagine the regulation law, he was hanged because he was found in possession of illegal firearm, a revolver, and 6 rounds of ammunition. And according to that law, which can be used by the Kenyan government, they are only sentenced in hanging next. So he was sent to death. And that was the real leader of Mama, but not Kenya.
Okay, we have another question. We have another couple questions. I want to try to get through these. We may not be able to get through all of them. The next question is from Luezi. Who asks, what a great show, who says, what a great show, real good clarity coming out of this show. Is it true that the poor workers from Kalenjin ethnic group also torched the house of the former Kenyan president, Arap Moi, who is also from the Kalenjin tribe? And is it a sign of a growing class consciousness in Kenya?
No, that's not the sign of, as the people also say that it's not genocide. People were just expressing their anger against the ruling class. For example, in the Rift Valley, the Kalenjin community were expressing the anger against Moi, who was behind the Moi party government. Who was supporting during the campaign time. In fact, right now he's not here, he's just he has run away. They say that he has gone to medical attention in America, the Indian, but he just ran away, watching people burning and people woman burning another poor man's house. And the one thing is that the land in Kenya, for sure, has been brought about by the problem of land. You know, during the colonial era, the white men took up the land was that man's land. But when the woman went away, the black people under Kenyatta rule took up the land which was given by white men, but it didn't give the land back to all that people. It was the community, the concerned community of the particular region. Like, for example, in the coast region, it didn't bring back the land to the coast people. He just grabbed that land and made it and developed the land with friends. So the colonial people are angry about that. And the Rift Valley region took up the land from the white man and divided it with friends and forgot about the Kalenjin, the majority in the Rift Valley region. So the Kalenjin were expressing out the anger about that. And that has been done by Kenyatta government, Moi government, and as well as Moi government. But it is going to cool down. Soon, it is going to cool down. But we are going to suffer for that for some time. But now that people are understanding and awakening, you know that your enemy is the ruling class, but not the working class. So the nearby, the little neighbor, not the not those type of struggle class. No, they don't want to war. They want to stop the struggle war, but they want to fight the ruling class. Because the biggest enemy, our enemy, is the ruling class. They are dividing us and ruling us the way the white men did. And they are using poverty because they know that we are poor. We don't have land. They come out and create in animosity, create an enemy against another tribe. They are those that are not good people. Fight them. When people fight. But now people are now realizing there's no need to fight in a neighbor. Yeah, the enemy is the ruling class. That's our enemy. Because as I told you, Kenya is composed of about 43 tribes. But this election, they came out and voted the poor tribe against the rich tribe. We are telling people, there are only two tribes in Kenya, poor tribe and the rich tribe. So we, majority, the poor, let's fight again. Let's throw out the rich tribe.
Yes.
And rich tribe are the root cause of problems in Africa, in the Kenya, as well as the Great Lakes region and the southern part region. That is the Zimbabwe, Namibia, Angola, Mozambique, Tanzania, and some parts of Zambia.
I want to, we have another question that's come in. This is from Nkululeku Sechaba. And this question is, what are some of the names of the U.S. or British-owned corporations or products that are produced from the resources stolen from Kenya?
Unilever is a big company based in Kenya, but it's a British company. And there is the BAT, British American Tobacco. This is the British American Tobacco, British BAT. The tobacco is being produced from Kenya, but still is taken to foreign countries as the British American Tobacco. And there is the Williamson Mining in Tanzania as well as in Kenya. And there's also Williamson Tea Company. And there's also Finlay Tea Company. These are all big foreign companies based in Kenya.
And we have another question. And the question is, this person didn't send in a name, but it says, do you think that the fighting will continue until Kibaki is overthrown?
Yeah, this will continue. We must say that what we want is a recount. But before a recount of the vote, we want a transitional government of 3 months or 9 weeks. Within that period, Kibaki must step out. And we do a proper recount with the international community, international observers, and international mediators. We the masses, John Kofor from Ghana, who is the AU leader, another leader, they say, like Kofi Annan, and others, to mediate. Not the white man, we need the black people to mediate on that, on DVF. And if the ASI, Akadosh International, I think Omari can come up and say something on that issue, maybe he can also come up to mediate between. Because I think the only force of the poor is Omari, or the only force of the poor is the African Security International. Because as we know, AU is also part and parcel of the white man. Although John Kofor is the black man, but AU is the part and parcel of the white man. So maybe other black people organizing such as African Security International must come in. And maybe mediate the in between.
Yes.
Because this time or never. No coalition. If they force a coalition, then people are going to fight.
Yes.
because we cannot allow connection unity, government unity, while the ruling class sold our vote. We the masses, we voted them out. How can we sit down with them? How can we sit down with them while you voted them out? The Americans are saying we must sit down with them. The people are saying also we must sit down. We're not going to sit down with them. We want them out, and then we do what we think is best for us.
Yes, yes. Well, we're almost out of time. We've got a couple of minutes left, comrade. Is there anything that you would like to say in closing before we close out?
I think something that I can say that we, before we get for it, 400, we come together before working team. Working class is the majority, and the working class has got the power to make it. Working class has got the power to rearrange each and everything. And this must be done. We must start with Kenya now. And then by the end of this year, there will be a general election in Ghana, and then we do something in Ghana.
Yes.
Now, as an example to other parts of Africa, start now. Don't wait for the white men to come in. Start making talking, and we fold our hands. We must talk now. I'm happy now. AIC they're doing something. They're going to do picketing at the embassy of Kenya and on Monday, and on Tuesday, next week. And I think there's a need also to do picketing on the Kenya-US embassy, in the Kenyan embassy, and other parts of European countries. This must be done all over the world. Now we say that AIC, as Africa Police International, we are against coalition government. What we want is let the masses talk. Let the masses do what they want. Let the masses do what they think is right for them. But not, let them let the outsiders to decide for them. Don't let Kibaki to decide for us. Kibaki is not our leader. Kibaki is there illegally. We didn't vote for him.
Yes.
And you depend on your support.
I want to express my appreciation to you, comrade, for being on with us today, and I hope that I look forward to continuing to work with you, comrades, out there in Kenya, and moving this struggle forward to liberate and unite our Africa.
Thank you, Africa.
Thank you.
Liberate today.
Uhuru, comrade.
Has it been said already? Let it be done. Yeah. We are the children of the Rastaman. We are the children.